Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hi, how are you? My name is Andrew WK. They say when things are very delicious, it must be Heritage Radio.
Episode 167 of The Morning After. I am your host, Sari Kamen. My co-host, Jessie Kiefer, is actually no longer with us. She's still alive, thank God, but she is moving to L.A. And in a way, it is kind of like she died because it's L.A. Just kidding, Jessie. I love you forever. In studio with me is my new co-host, Leslie Stockton. Hello, Leslie.
Hey, what's going on? So happy to be here.
Well, we're so happy to have you. Tell America hello.
Hello, America. It's really awesome to be here and to share this moment with you every Sunday.
Also, tell the rest of the world hello. Because we're
same
international.
Goes for the world. All of the internet. Thank you for having me. So, Sari,
yes.
Here you have some food news for
That's
us.
Correct, Leslie. Okay, this week's food news, speaking of international, we're starting in Australia today with my favorite restaurant, Domino's Pizza, as you know. So apparently Domino's is testing the world's first pizza delivery robot. What do you think?
Well, I don't have an opinion on that yet.
Actually, on the line, we have our guest today, which is Jessie Weiner. She's the author of Edible Garden, which we're going to talk to her a little bit later. Jessie, you there?
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, thank you. And we're going to do the interview with you in a little bit. But first, we wanted to bring you in for food news. We're talking about how Domino's in Australia has developed the first pizza delivery robot, which is a DRU, in case you didn't know. That stands for Domino's Robotic Unit. It's apparently a military grade robot because historically those types of robots were used as targets for live fire army training. So I guess those who are paranoid about their pizza being in a war zone
or a particularly rough neighborhood.
That's true. That's true. We can all sleep a little safer tonight knowing that army-grade robots are going to be delivering your pizza in the future.
Have we decided if drones deliver pizzas better than robots? Or
I don't know if we've decided. That's to be determined.
That's a good question.
It's a really good point, Jessie. Okay, moving on. And Jessie, I feel like this might speak to you, actually.
Okay.
So Weed Nutella is now a thing.
I've heard, yes.
Oh, you've heard. Well, look at you all up on the news. So Nutella is our, you know, favorite delicious creamy chocolate hazelnut spread. And there's a new version of it. It's called Crontella, as in chronic Tella. And right now I think you can only get it in Canada. But Leslie and I were talking before the show, Jessie, about how like it would be awesome to, you know, like you're in Paris, like go to the cafe, like drink some coffee. Spread some Weed Nutella on a brioche.
Lightly toasted brioche.
And do some coloring.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think coloring has, I don't know if the whole trend in coloring has evolved after marijuana has been legalized in certain states. But
right.
If I can dare to make that comparison, I think there might be something there.
I think there's something there, and I think you might consider partnerships in the future.
Totally.
Okay, cool. Okay, last but certainly not least, big news this week. An old woman apparently crashed her car into a very busy Arby's in Detroit. Luckily, nobody was hurt, although a lot of people were really upset. But that's actually not the news portion of this story. The news portion of the story is that the weirdest dude in the world happens to work at this Arby's. And this is what he had to say about this crash.
I thought perhaps the end of days was upon us, but it turned out it was just a disoriented old lady in a champagne-colored Toyota Avalon crashing into my world like DMB circa 1996. Who's got their claws in you, my friend? Into your heart, I'll beat again.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was the news.
It's a passionate Arby's employee.
On that one.
Very effusive Arby's employee. I don't know what any of that means, except apparently he quotes Dave Matthews Band.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm not going to comment on that. It's just too awesome for me
And only the mega fans really shorten it to DMB.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's like,
well, I'm glad
committed.
I'm glad there's still one.
Yeah.
And they found him. All right, that's the news. We will be back very shortly. Hang tight. We'll be back with the interview with Jesse Cavalos-Weiner.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
Jesse Cavalos-Weiner is an illustrator, a food stylist, and an author. Jesse writes and illustrates a popular blog about her life called TheFrancoFly.com. She has written a handful of cookbooks, including a collection of American family recipes adapted to French tastes. Her latest book, Edible Paradise, a coloring book of seasonal fruits and vegetables, intricately explores the edible plant kingdom. From Chicago, Jesse currently lives and works in Paris, France. Welcome to the show, Jesse Weiner.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
It is our pleasure. We're so happy to have you. Are you in Paris right now?
No, I'm actually in the Hudson Valley.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. I have a river view at the moment, so it's not bad.
Oh, cool. We have a view of pizza. Jealous?
Not either.
It's almost as good as a river.
Almost. I think I envy you, actually.
We can swim.
Not quite the vast bluffs of Hudson Valley, but it'll do.
No. So you have this beautiful new book. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It came out last Tuesday, so Whoa. It's still very fresh. I still have book brain, so
brand
I'm not all
new.
There, but it's still all very exciting.
Well, we feel very excited to be hopefully one of the first interviews you've had since it's come out.
Yeah. Well, I was on Radio Cherry Bomb the other day, but you're my second Heritage
Radio. Okay, that's fine, because they're also on Heritage Radio.
Yeah. So. Yes. And we love them.
NPR yeah. hasn't called yet, so.
Well, after this interview, they will. So anyway, tell us. So it's an adult coloring book, which is my new favorite phrase.
Yes.
I love adult coloring books.
You do?
Have yeah. you guys explored adult coloring books yet?
I have. I have a large set of pencils, some markers. I think they're better than Xanax.
Oh,
true,
yeah.
right? It's a lot cheaper as well, huh?
And I'm a lot cheaper, and there's no, I guess, chemical dependency issues involved.
Unless you're huffing.
It depends what kind of marker
you're
using.
Yeah, that's right. That's
marker,
yeah.
markers you're
that.
Using.
Yeah. Yeah. So your adult coloring book is all these different beautiful fruits and vegetables, and it's all organized seasonally. Jesse, just can you tell us a little bit about like where the idea came from and like why is it a coloring book as opposed to a cookbook?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking that. Actually, I noticed adult coloring books definitely trending in France. I think it's one of the only trends that arrived in France first because most things come from the States a few years later.
Like croissants.
And I noticed all of the bookstores were flooded with these adult coloring books, and the subjects range from fashion to, The Secret Garden is kind of the number one bestseller, so more kind of psychedelic patterns, et cetera. And since I only think about food, I thought, food, there's got to be something here. So
you only think
I started
about
thinking
food.
About, yeah. I thought about what could work. Is this, I think what's great about Edible Paradise is how kind of psychedelic it is, but it's very natural at the same time. So I thought it would be great to explore fruits and vegetables and everything that creates fruits and vegetables, the changing seasons, the insects, evolution of colors and different ingredients as well. So that's how it evolved. So I pitched the idea around and then in France, but nobody was really interested. And then finally I brought the idea to my editor, Martinka at Rizzoli. And about a week later, there was press in the New York Times and NPR all over the place about adult coloring books. So it was definitely a very serendipitous moment where everything just fell into place like
yeah.
that.
I mean, I think actually to Leslie's point, it's probably not a coincidence that that's a thing right now. Like, I think it probably is actually very kind of like relaxing and de-stressing. Is that something that you found?
Yeah, totally. And the other cool thing about it as well is, seasonal vegetables are definitely having their moment as well. And people are more interested in eating seasonally, about really understanding where their food comes from. So it isn't a cookbook, but there's not really much of an agenda behind it. But if people walk away with it more seasonally, then that's great, and if not, they can just color it in, and that makes me happy too.
One thing that I really enjoy about your book is how loose and organic the shapes are. They're not mm-hmm. so rigid and they're more artistic and they flow, and I really appreciate that about your work.
Well, thank you very much. That's one of the things we definitely strive to do, is a lot of the coloring books are very kind of pen tool, you know, very copy and paste, very not very organic. And, you know, obviously with fruits and vegetables, it definitely brings a lot more interest to the subject when it's all done in freehand as well. So, I mean, if you look at the market, I feel like there are more interesting artist-driven coloring books that are coming out at the moment. But I think it definitely is new in that regard.
What do you think the correlation is between people who like to eat fruits and vegetables like me, but I'm not good at drawing things? Like, how do you market, I guess, or sort of like, what's the elevator pitch to someone like me who's never really considered an adult coloring book, just because, you know, drawing is something that I've always kind of crashed and burned at, but I do enjoy vegetables and fruits. I mean, I eat them and I cook them. So why is this something that someone like me, who doesn't usually like think to draw things she likes, would be interested in?
You know, I think adult coloring books have really emerged because people really want a way to express some sense of imagination or to unwind and really focus on the activity at hand. And so fruits and vegetables are relatable, especially if it's a subject that you like already. And at the same time, it helps you unplug and just really focus on each little element and putting together a composition and stepping back, editing, thinking about all these little things that really make a composition something special. So, I mean, this is kind of a stretch to say, but I feel like coloring in this book is kind of like being in a way, but process-driven. You have to think about each bit and piece. It's a long-term process, but at the day it's rewarding when you can step back and look at the final project.
Yeah, and I do appreciate that there are lines. You color within the lines, so I think even maybe an imbecile like me might be able to make a fruit.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, it is creative. You know, it's up to you to decide what you want to do, and you can spin it however you want. It doesn't have to be realistic. You can color outside the lines. You can do positive and negative space. You can explore all these different things. So we all need to do something that's conscious, but it's, you know, your brain turns off, but it's not, you know, it's a conscious way of, you know, unwinding. It's not just about hitting the refresh button and,
cheaper than
looking
Xanax.
At people.com, which I love to do, but
cheaper than Xanax.
So I just want to ask you, because you're from Chicago, what made you move to Paris?
I just graduated from Denison University in Central Ohio, and I studied.
Yeah, Ohio.
Ohio. Do we have some Ohioans?
Oh yes,
yeah.
We do.
Oh yeah. Cleveland.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Stop shaking your head, David. I can see you.
I had like 1 year before I had to pay back my student loan, so I thought, why not just travel and just do whatever I can in a year, you know, totally untied and, you know, no strings attached. So I looked up Au Pair Paris on Google, and then 2 weeks later I was on my way and was living with a French family. And
that's like a exploring. That's like a book.
I know.
That's like, it sounds like a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe Bridget Jones.
So yeah, that happened. And it was an au pair, so it was kind of a lot coming from, you know, very pampering liberal arts school to, you know, watching blow drying a little girl's hair every day. But
did you speak any French when you moved?
No, not at all. So that was also a huge cultural shift for me. And it was pretty exhausting at the beginning.
Yeah. And so you just decided to stick around?
Yeah. Well, I met somebody at the end of my first year, and that.
Okay, this is a movie.
Yeah,
that's how it works
out there. Yeah, give me a call. But so I met somebody, and then I moved back to the States a few times, and I came back, and then I moved back permanently about 4 years ago. So I've been in France for almost 8 years now, more or less.
Assuming you've picked up a little French at this.
Yeah, this point. It came eventually, but it takes. I mean, for me, it took probably a good year and a half or mm-hmm. 2 years to get a working level.
Yeah. So we're, you know, Leslie and I were talking, we're just really curious, like, how is Paris doing? I mean, you know, we talked to a couple of people like after the Paris attacks, I think in November, but we haven't checked back in a while. So I'm really curious to hear, you know, kind of is everything back to normal or is there, what's the climate like?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking that. It's kind of hard to say, you know, because the events were really traumatic for everybody, and it was kind of the beginning of a new reality. I mean, walking into department stores, you would get metal detector, you know, and all that stuff, and you couldn't go to the post office without having to open your jacket. And I don't know, I just feel like the city was so depressed for probably a good 6 weeks after everything happened. And I don't know, I mean, there are definitely tense moments, and it's just kind of the new beginning of something else. It's kind of sad to say, but I feel like everything changed after that.
Has it reverted, do you think, or like this is the new normal?
I mean, I feel kind of like, you know, everything that's happening in the States politically, things have become a little bit more extreme, and there's an election coming up, so I feel like all of that stuff is definitely going to affect, you know, how people vote. And people are really sensitive to all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, at the end of the day, French people are really resilient to lots of stuff. And there definitely was a banding together of everybody. And, I don't know what to tell you. It's sad, and it still is really heavy on everybody's hearts. But
sure.
You just kind of have to move on and live your life.
Yeah, I think, you know, New Yorkers and Parisians are very kind of similarly resilient in that way.
Totally. I mean, yeah, it's definitely comparable to 9/11, I'm sure.
Yeah. Can you tell us some of your favorite places in the city
that you love to
eat?
I actually wrote a list because I was worried I would.
Oh, that's smart.
I would freeze up.
Cool. Yeah. So what's hot in Paris? Where do you go?
I usually go out for lunch because I find it's a really good deal, and there are lots of really great restaurants that have really amazing lunch specials. So you can get entree, plat, dessert. So it's like a appetizer, a main, and dessert for anywhere from like 15 to 20 euros, which is amazing.
So
some of my favorites, there's a place called Yard, which is kind of farm to table. I think it's in the 10th or the 11th arrondissement, which has a lot of hot restaurants right now. But they have just really beautiful food. I think there's an American who was behind it, but just really fresh, seasonal food. What else? The Broken Arm is a concept store.
It's a coffee shop, right?
Yeah, it's a coffee shop, and they have amazing food, actually. I think it's only open for breakfast and lunch, but it's got a Swedish chef, and she makes the most beautiful compositions on a plate, you know, and lots of super veggies, very Scandinavian, lots of fish, and it's really delicious.
Yeah, I want to go there.
And another big thing at the moment is natural wine. And so there are lots of places that revolve around that in small plates. So, for example, there's a Café de la Nouvelle Marie, which is in the 5th, I believe. And it's not really classic French. I feel like it's French, but it's revisited by young people. So it's really good food that goes really well with amazing wine. So that's good. And it's very affordable, too, for what it's worth. What else? In the same vein, there's Bouvette. It's not La Bouvette, which has a New York outpost. It's owned by a girl named Camille who worked at Chateaubriand, which is one of the best restaurants in Paris. But I believe she's a sommelier, and she does some amazing small plates and then amazing natural wine as well.
I love that restaurant.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And then
my favorite thing about it, sorry to interrupt.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, sorry. My favorite thing about it is how everybody drinks outside.
Yeah, that's very true.
Which, like, you know, from a New York, like, you just can't do that in New York. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Hang out, drink, can make a whole night of that on the street.
They did just decriminalize it here, so you won't go to jail for it anymore. Just a ticket. Yeah, big, huge.
Planned after the show.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, cool. Sorry. Yeah, sorry to interrupt, Jesse.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. No, it's fine. Do you want to know more?
Or? I do want to know, yeah.
Okay, what else? There's a place called Holy Belly, which has been in the food press quite a bit, but it's kind of inspired by an Australian brekkie joint, as they say, but it's kind of the only place in Paris where you can get really good fried eggs and homemade sausage.
Toast.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And they also make really good kind of French-inspired lunches as well.
Nice. Do you have anywhere in particular that you like to go and work? Like where you would go and draw, or do you usually do that at home?
I just got a studio recently, which has changed a lot of my working rhythm. But there are lots of cool co-working cafes in Paris now as well. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a flat rate, an hourly rate, and you can hang out, and they're free snacks. So I don't go there because it's all-you-can-eat popcorn, and it doesn't usually end well.
I thought that was supposed to be a good thing.
I know.
Nice people.
But there's some really cool new coffee shops. Craft coffee is booming, and there's a first wave, and now a lot of people are trying to duplicate this kind of, muffin and coffee experience. So there's a good place in the Marais called Lustique, and they have really good craft coffee and really comfy seats and free Wi-Fi. That's a good working place.
Well, that all sounds very good. Mm-hmm. It seems like Paris has changed a lot. Like, it's becoming more, I guess, almost like similar, like not to Brooklyn necessarily, but
they're obsessed with Brooklyn though.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's not like it isn't Brooklyn, but it's kind of the same things that like we over here, like the things that we like about places, like that attract us to places.
Yeah.
Are
totally.
Sort of, like we see that.
Authenticity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. That's a big dining trend in the last year was Brooklyn and very farm to table and, waiters who are very careful about explaining everything. And
I mean, that's good because, Paris hasn't always been known for great service.
That's true.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Do you see that change?
Attentive service are always a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's part of the whole experience. It's nice.
Has craft beer hit Paris?
It has, yeah. They're actually, I have my studio in Montreuil, which is kind of the Brooklyn of Paris. I've been saying for a few years, it's kind of an overstatement, but there's a good brewery there called Deck and Donahue. And I think it's the two French and American guys who started it, but they've done some really amazing stuff. And there are actually a few really cool craft beer bars. One's called the Toilette, and the other one is, the name of it. Yeah, there are a few really kind of cool natural wine and craft beer places.
Cool. Have you been to that anarchist bakery that's in that neighborhood?
No. Tell me about it.
I don't know about this either.
This is really cool. I went there when I was in Paris. I was in grad school with food studies, and it's called La Conquête de Pain.
Okay.
And it's in that area, and it's these guys who are like hardcore socialists, I would say, and all of their sandwiches are named after like famous anarchist like luminary figures, and it's a cooperative working space, so everybody makes the same thing, and they just have like all these wonderful programs where they're committed to using like ethnic ingredients of different kinds of people that live in that neighborhood, and it's just very like well thought out and fair, and you should check it out because they also have really delicious bread.
I am curious though, are they anarchists or are they socialists?
I don't know. I mean, like, I think they're socialists, but they're like
not that I'm judging either way.
Yeah,
I'm just curious.
I mean, I think they're like more socialist, but they're like anarchy is cool.
Okay, cool.
And here's some breaking news. I heard there's actually a Freegan restaurant now too called Freegan Pony.
No way.
What is that?
Oh, it's when they go and get food when they liberate food from dumpsters.
They liberate food, which is another word for saying they eat food out of garbage cans. That's a restaurant. Wait, you said that's a restaurant in Paris?
Yeah, it just opened apparently. I'm kind of, I'm not really inspired by that whole concept, but maybe that's
I cannot believe that's a restaurant. That sort of like defeats the purpose of dumpster diving,
right? It's going to take a pretty hefty PR campaign to lift the stigma from dumpster
food. I know, right?
I'm not volunteering.
I don't know.
That's funny. Well, Jesse, thank you so much for updating us on the current restaurant scene in Paris.
Anytime.
We're so excited about your book. Where are the best ways to find your book and buy your book?
I believe Barnes & Noble picked it up, so that's big. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I don't know which other places in New York carry it at the moment, but, it's always best to buy from a local bookshop, but it's on Amazon as well. So
good point.
Find me if you want to order it.
Yeah, and where can we find you on the interwebs?
My blog is called thefrankofly.com. And that's my handle for Instagram and Twitter. And my professional site is my name, jessicanelswiner.com. So, yeah, I'm never too far if you just search the right thing.
Sounds good. Well, stay with us, please, Jesse, because we'll be right back with the Morning After quiz.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org. Jesse, do we still have you on the line?
I'm here. Still
okay.
Here.
I believe that Leslie has a little thing called The Morning After quiz for you.
Hi, Jesse.
Hey, I'm ready, so, I think.
It's the least important quiz of your life, to quote Sari. Your name is Jesse Weiner, but what do you know about wieners? Hot dogs, that is.
That's a rhetorical question. Yeah. That's
not
the question.
Don't answer that. So are you ready?
Okay.
So first off, first question. Japan is known for outlandish takes on American food. Which of these is an actual hot dog for sale on the streets of Tokyo? A, a sumo dog. This hot dog is topped with many elements from the sumo wrestler's diet, including meatballs, tofu, copious vegetables, udon noodles, and fried mackerel. The whole thing weighs in at 5 pounds. B.
That was all one dog?
Yeah, that was one dog.
Oh.
One dog.
Okay.
Hence the sumo dog.
Right.
B. An early adaptation of the American hot dog that involved wrapping a steamed wiener in sticky rice topped with dried fish flakes, nori, and squid ink mayonnaise.
Oh, or, that sounds good.
That sounds
right?
Good.
Don't you want that?
Yes.
Or C, a black foot-long hot dog where the wiener and the bun are dyed pitch black using wood ash and served with ketchup, mustard, and relish. Which one of those is an actual hot dog?
Ooh.
Okay, they're not all actual.
Really
they're
hard.
Not all
actual. I'm just going to base it on what I want to eat is number two. Number B?
B?
Or letter B?
It's not an actual hot dog, but don't you wish it was?
It should be.
Yeah.
The black hot dog is actually a very popular street snack in Tokyo.
Yeah, I would Yay. Much rather eat the second one.
They also make like completely black hamburgers as well.
I believe we've covered that on Food News.
Not the same place, but it's still for sale
in
Tokyo.
So that's a thing.
That's a thing, yeah.
People like all black food.
Yeah.
Does it taste better?
I'm not sure. They claim it's better for you because of the wood ash. Of the bamboo ash.
Oh, okay.
I thought wood ash was bad for you.
It depends on what country you're in.
I guess. I mean, you know.
As good for you as hot dogs, right?
Yeah, right.
All right. B, so the second question. Tokero Kobayashi is a Japanese competitive eater and holds the world record for eating the most hot dogs, which is 69.
And how long?
In 12 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He was arrested at the Nathan's Famous International Hot Dog Eating Contest in 2010 for doing what? Throwing water-soaked hot dogs at security and judges in a delusional fit from eating so much? B, not being able to compete due to a contract dispute, stormed the stage at the end of competition while the crowd chanted his name? Or C, after losing the competition, grabbed the mic from the MC and went on an expletive-laden rant on the inferiority of Nathan's hot dogs? Apparently, he's a Sabrette fan.
Ooh, jeez. He doesn't sound good in either. I guess I'll say number C or letter C.
C, that's not it. It was B. He wasn't able to compete in the crowd like Kobayashi, Kobayashi. And he just got swept up in it and he like stormed the stage and they carried him away.
He was arrested?
He was arrested.
Oh,
I know.
Did
They New use York hot City. Dog currency to bail them out.
New York City can be so lame sometimes.
So lame.
Okay, third one. Okay, speaking of the Nathan's International Hot Dog Eating Contest that takes place on July 4th every year in Coney Island.
Save the date.
Yeah, save the date. What is the name of the top winner's trophy at Nathan's Famous International Hot Dog Eating Contest? Is it A, the Weenie Scepter, B, the Mustard Belt, or C, the Crown of Frankenfurter?
Oh.
Oh. I don't know. C?
Oh, no, it's the mustard belt.
I love this game.
But the Crown of Frankenfurter sounds really epic, doesn't it?
It should be that.
You know what? I'm going to write a letter to Nathan's right now.
That's good. It's in your free time.
I have so much of it.
Well, you didn't win the quiz, but you won our hearts, Jessie.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet.
It was so wonderful
it's
having
true.
You here.
And we certainly don't hold your lack of wiener knowledge against you.
Not at all.
In fact, we love you even more. Thank you so much for joining us on The Morning After today. We're very excited about your book.
Let me know if you have any more questions about Paris or if you need a Paris course.
Oh, I thought you were going to say wieners.
When we come to Paris, when Sari and I come to Paris, we're totally knocking on your door.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we are. Well, thank you. We can't wait to get your book. And everyone out there, go to your local bookstore and buy it. And that's it for this week. Join us next week, as always, Sundays, 3 p.m., New York City time, on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.